Very good day to you. I'm Howard Feldman. This is the Synthesis Podcast. And like the rest of the world, we are debating what is going on with WhatsApp. A lot of people jumping to all sorts of other communication tools. I try to get myself really worked up about it, but I haven't managed to succeed. I fully intend doing just that because I like to be part of what's in, but somehow I'm not managing, which is why we decided to get together today to understand a little bit more about it. Naresh Kabhawan is the founder and founder of the Lit Institute. She has written extensively on the subject, and Jake Shepherd, of course, a founder and a director at a Synthesis. So we thought we'd cover different areas. We'd talk about the data privacy. We would talk about technology and data, and cover the legal side as well. Don't forget afterwards to subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you have access to this and other podcasts when we release them. Good afternoon, everybody. Narishka, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, very, very good. Thank you. Am I right or am I wrong not to get myself completely worked up about this? Do I need to work on myself?
I think if you're getting worked up about the WhatsApp update, you should start getting worked up about maybe all the social media you're using. I don't think you can do one without the other. I think that's really the starting point.
All right. So take us through the legal side of it.
So, you know, privacy policies have been around for a while. Basically, everything we use has these terms and conditions lurking somewhere in the back end. We usually just tick a little box and, you know, we don't really think about it after that. We've accepted and we continue on with life. But now, based on various regulations and laws and, you know, kind of ethics that have come to the fore when it comes to privacy, the social media platforms are actually trying to be more transparent about what they're doing with our information. And one way of doing that is they're actually now telling us upfront in a summary form, you know, accept our terms, but we're going to be doing 1, 2, 3 with your information. And now the fact that they're actually telling us what they're going to do with our information is actually causing the hysteria. Whereas in the past, you just tick the box, download the update, and you wouldn't think twice about it. So in a way, they're actually doing something good because they're raising awareness and they're being transparent. But because of the lack of awareness in the past and the lack of awareness as to how our data is actually being shared in the back end across, you know, all different social media platforms, that's really where the hysteria is coming from. And then also a little bit of misconceptions as to what is being shared. You know, there's a lot of myths and fake news also floating around that's causing a bit of hype.
All right. So Jake Shepherd, founder of and director at Synthesis, your take?
Yeah. So thanks, Howard. Good afternoon, I suppose. And it's great to be on this forum with Narishka. Really a pleasure. I think Narishka's right in that, you know, our data has been mined and used by the various social media. Facebook's actually one of the worst culprits in that respect for a long time. And essentially, I think maybe you should really say is this is an opportunity to talk about data privacy. Yes, it's been brought into public consciousness. So maybe it's the time now to actually say, well, should we care? Now, I asked this question to my daughter, and she said to me, you know, well, actually, I don't really mind. I've got nothing to hide. And I think that's the way most of us feel. We've got nothing to hide, really. And if you've got nothing to hide, so why not bare all? I'm not talking about nude photos on Facebook, et cetera. I'm just saying, why not just show all the data about ourselves, et cetera? And that, to me, is the crux, is we actually need to stop and ask ourselves the question, well, maybe why not? And I think that for me is the opportunity here. So yes, I agree, WhatsApp in their declaration by saying either accept it or delete. And they've put it in very stark terms. But I think if you look at all the other terms and conditions and privacy statements of other companies, they're not saying it the same way. They're not saying accept or go. They're saying accept. And if you don't want to accept, you have to accept because you just can't use our platform. So I think really what's happened is that the outcry is the way they've worded it. And that wording, which is to say, well, either you accept or go somewhere else, has forced us to grapple with data privacy. Beforehand, we just said, okay, because nothing actually viscerally got to us. But I think it's this whole question of, well, what should I be scared of? You know, I've got nothing to hide. Should we let, I would love to test that because I think that question actually is the question that all of us need to really grapple with.
But don't we have almost an ambivalence around this? Because whereas I might absolutely not want my data shared because I maybe I'm a very private person, at the same time, I'm quite happy to go onto a website and be offered have suggestions of books that I might want to read because that's been stored and that data has been gathered about me. So I'm not getting suggestions about inappropriate books or books that I don't want to read or I find boring. Yeah. So I'm loving that actually. But isn't it really just about where we are comfortable at any given time in our evolution?
I think what we need to do is we need to really see that there are two benefits or there are two outcomes. One is those things are a benefit to me. So you've outlined some of those things, the books you are given, the adverts you've shown, stuff that's going to be applicable to you, and we love that. So that's where it's good, that is, it's good for me. I think what we don't focus on enough is where it's good for somebody else and maybe detrimental for me. And I think there are enough examples of that to really showcase this. So for one example could be, you know, from a psychological point of view, these big social media companies now have enough ammunition to really know what our psychological weak points are. What are those things that we really want to go and spend inappropriately beyond our means to try and get those things? Or we need a loan. And therefore, these third-party applications bombard us the 20th of the month, the 21st of the month, we know you're running out of money. You need a loan, don't you? And in the fine print, download this loan application. How did they know that? Well, they know that because of all the data that they're gathering. And in the fine print, it just says little things like, you know, in 2 months, you owe us 100% interest. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a bit usurious, but, and essentially you'd land up in this debt trap. And at the same time, they then say, well, we actually know your relationship maps. We know all of your contacts. And if you don't pay up, who are they going to contact? All your contacts and say, look, this person's delinquent. Mm. So they turn all of your contacts into an harassment police force. So these are the sort of things that can happen if data privacy isn't dealt with seriously.
Narushka, from your perspective, how do you think we can balance it? Can we? Or is it always going to be an uneasy relationship?
I think, you know, each person does need to reflect for themselves where their kind of risk appetite is, where their comfort zone is as to what they're comfortable putting out there and what they're comfortable being kind of monetized. Because you have to understand, you know, if you're using something for free, you know, it's not out of the benevolence of the Silicon Valley gods. That's not why the thing is free. These are large innovative technology companies, they're there to make money. You have to understand that as a starting point. So if their services to you as an end user are free, you know, where are they making the money? So what are you giving them? You're giving them information, you're posting pictures or your dinner, whatever it is, as well as, you know, a whole lot of other metadata surrounded to the content that you actually post. And then a whole lot of other little pinpoints that they pick up based on the device you use and all of that. You know, they're turning all of that information through this whole new profession of data science and big data analytics and all these very, very clever, who've actually created an industry out of nothing. You know, this didn't exist not so long ago. And they've, you know, found innovative ways to monetize this data very creatively and kind of sell these packages to businesses who want to get your attention and sell you things. And they're doing it in such a way where it's not a blanket advert to the whole world. They're saying you, as this person who, you know, likes their coffee made a certain way, likes to shop at these stores, drives this kind of car, you would probably be interested in buying these type of clothes. Therefore, these clothing retailers will target you because much higher chance of you purchasing. And then us as the end user, we also get to see adverts relevant to us as opposed to just random things that are popping up, which can add to that convenience. However, we have to be very aware as to what we're giving up when we're using these free platforms. We are paying. We're just paying not with money in the traditional sense. We're paying our information. We're paying with our data. You may have heard, you know, people saying data is the new oil or data is the new gold. It's very, very true, because the companies who have access to the most amount of data are the most valuable companies in the world right now. That's just how it is. And because they've created these industries, and because these industries didn't really have rules and regulations to start with, they've kind of created the game in a sense. And now the regulators are asking questions. They say, oh, so this is what you're doing with our information. Okay, this is what you actually know about me. You know all of this. Okay. And now they're saying, so perhaps you shouldn't know that much information about billions of people around the world. Perhaps there should be some kind of boundaries or frameworks in place to prevent you from abusing that information. So it's kind of a chicken and egg scenario where the one is already, you know, it's kind of trying to unscramble an egg, let's say that, you know, the egg's already been scrambled and now we're trying to put it back into its shell. So you've seen, you know, all the CEOs from Silicon Valley being called in front of Congress in the US and being asked all sorts of questions. If you watched the Mark Zuckerberg interview about 2 years ago, he basically explained how the internet works to the Senate. They asked him about cloud. They asked him, you know, about ads. How does it all? Very, very basic questions. And these are the people that are creating the legislation that regulates these companies. So it's a really, really weird situation where we now are starting to get some kind of movement towards, you know, regulating these giants. And they are actually, in a way, creating the regulations as well, because they are the ones who know the most about these areas. They've done the most R&D in these areas. So it's kind of a weird situation, and nothing specific to any jurisdiction. It's a global kind of issue, but we do need to move away from situations where data is being abused, but we also have to understand that in order to receive free services, there has to be monetization somewhere in the chain.
And to some extent, we're a little hypocritical, aren't we? Because if we decide, for example, to promote this podcast and we decide to do it on Facebook, we're going to go and we are going to ask them to help us target people who would be interested in the subject. And we might not have any nefarious goals. We just want to reach the right people. But we actually are using the very data that we're saying, well, should they be allowed to have. So it's kind of circular that we're all, as you said, we're all scrambled up in the same egg, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You can't, you know, you can't have it both ways. No, so if you want the benefits, you have to realize that you have to be part of the, you know, you have to, there has to be a give and a take. You can't just take from them, because then how are they going to make money? So some of the arguments have said, why can't I have the option of choosing whether or not to share my data with WhatsApp and the Facebook group of companies when I'm using the app? Why is it a, you know, share or get off the app? Well, that's exactly it. They're not a nonprofit organization. They're not saying, here's a free service. If you don't want to share your information, you can continue to use it. If you want to share your information, you can choose to do so. It makes sense from a business perspective why it's all in or get off.
Right. Jake, as a founder and director at Synthesis, a technology company, this type of data analysis, analytics, must be something that's part of your everyday life.
Sure. So I think if you look at all of our clients, basically they all agree that what we need to do is we need to use the data that we have, that our clients have provided us. So if we do a lot of work for the banking world, but the transactions that they do on the, on, you know, that they know about, like what are the spending patterns, et cetera, and provide services that enrich their clients' lives and make it more sticky for their clients to actually stay with them. And so every single organization that has client data is in the business of trying to monetize that data, maybe not in a way of selling it on to other people, because a lot of the banks are precluded from doing that, but it's in a way of trying to keep their customers at the bank. And I think any bank or any organization that doesn't do that is actually not doing their job. You have to actually use whatever information is at your disposal so that you can provide a better and better service, so that you can actually make your offering more compelling than your competitors.
And it kind of makes sense, because if I am not a farmer, but I happen to bank with a bank that finances farming equipment, I'm not interested in seeing material or reading material around farming equipment. So it just doesn't make sense. But if I'm whatever it would be, I drive a car, then well, maybe I would be interested in hearing about some of those products. So it's really about the personalization, which both customers and the institution would appreciate, surely.
Yes, but I want to draw a distinction, and I want to actually use the concept of custodianship. So effectively, let's say if you're looking at a bank or you're looking at a retailer, they become the custodians of your data. And so banks would have, they're the custodians not only of your finances sitting in an account, but also your spending patterns, et cetera. And there's a whole bunch of legislation that if they go and, let's say, release that information inappropriately out onto the web, they are held accountable. They can be held accountable by the account holders, and they can be held accountable by legislators. But now if you think of big social media companies, they're not given the same onerous level of custodianship over your data. If they misbehave and provide it to third-party loan sharks, there's no recourse back to the supplier of the information who was supposed to be the custodian of your information. So I think there's an unequal playing field. So you can't really just equate, well, this is what all the organizations are doing with your data, where they're acting as good custodians, versus this is what the social media companies are doing with your data. They're not given responsibility as good custodians at all. I think that's the imbalance, what I'm seeing in terms of those two types of organizations and trying to equate the data sets between those two. Because I don't think the way the data is treated, the discipline or the sensitivity to which their data is treated is the same. I think there's a very different.
Right. And also it's very different in terms of maybe respect, because if somebody finds out that their personal information that the bank has is being shared elsewhere, well, you're going to leave that institution and go to another one. Whereas on social media, it really isn't the same. We don't have the same privileges. Narushka, your thoughts?
No, exactly. I think we're trying to move to that situation where we do add that level of accountability and responsibility on these tech giants, with the rise of things like the GDPR in the EU, the General Data Protection Regulation, which can fine global companies, a percentage of their revenue, which can be a significant fine as opposed to the smaller fines that we had previously. And that's why, in a sense, a lot of the social media companies do take the data of European citizens almost at a higher level or a higher level of responsibility and accountability compared to the rest of the world. So going back to WhatsApp, there's actually two privacy policies that they have. They have one for people based within the EEA, the Economic European Area, and one for people outside the EEA. And the differences between those two policies, or the main difference in the update that's causing the current debate, is that if you are outside the EEA, you have to agree to sharing your data across the Facebook group. And if you're within the EEA, you do not have to agree to that very, very big requirement. And part of the reason for that does stem from the new privacy regulations. Facebook's also in talks with regulators in Europe, the Irish Data Protection Regulator to be specific. And I think they actually want to upfront get the kind of consent or the go-ahead from the regulators before doing any kind of sharing with EU data with US companies because of fines they've received in the past and because of a lot of cases they've lost, for example, the Schrems 2 case regarding the data transfers from the EU to the US. So they're actually treating category, it's almost like first-class citizens and second-class citizens when it comes to data that they've created now, where the Europeans get the special treatment because they're probably more afraid of the fines there and the rest of the world, even though we have very similar privacy regulations. Our in South Africa, we have the Protection of Personal Information Act, which is largely modeled on the GDPR, and we do have the same protections as Europeans, but because of Facebook's view of everybody else versus the regulators in Europe, we do not get the same level of protection or responsibility or accountability as Jake was alluding to.
Mm. It also comes at a very interesting time because we are seeing almost to use one metaphor or perhaps a tipping point in another, where we've seen Twitter taking action, removing a US President Donald Trump, whether you agree with it or not. It just shows the immense power. We've had Facebook removing a whole lot of Ugandan Facebook accounts, which then and commenting on the Ugandan election. You then had Uganda shutting down the internet because of but all of this is happening, and we're starting to see that unlike a court of law that is transparent and has a process, we're suddenly seeing Facebook and Twitter, YouTube making decisions that actually affect or impact on people's freedom, on political environments, but actually happening behind closed doors in an opaque way that we don't really understand. Who's making the decisions? Are they qualified? Do they have a political bias, or do they have an agenda of some sort? So it's come during a time that I think for many people is the first time that they're looking up and saying, hold on a minute, do these guys have too much power?
Now you've really raised some very interesting points there. And I mean, there's something that's been grappled with, there's been many incidents over the last couple of years surrounding this. And, the latest argument is that, well, these are private companies who make decisions as to who can access their private services. And, they are entitled to their own kind of policies as to when somebody breaches that line, and then they can say, well, we reserve our right to not let you use our services because you're going to cause harm to others, or whatever other reasons they've decided in their policies. They don't want those users to use the service. They're saying it's very different to when a government censors the internet or censors a particular social media platform because they are private companies. However, if you do look at the user base of these companies, they amount into the hundreds of millions and even the billions, which is larger than a lot of countries. So then they're actually controlling the narrative, maybe even more so than if one country censored the internet, if you know what I mean. So they've got this more of a global narrative as opposed to a jurisdiction-specific narrative that they have power of and that they can control. And whether or not they have any particular political agenda, I mean, as you said, those things behind the scenes, who's making decisions and on what basis, we obviously don't have access to and we don't have the right to, because again, they are private companies. It's not a government who argues debates, in parliament, in an open forum, or anything like that. And I mean, we've had, the Cambridge Analytica scandal, which showed how, Facebook data was used to influence political outcomes in elections. We've had Val Pottinger and the bots on Twitter showing how, vast amounts of bots, created these narratives that didn't actually exist before to change political minds and shift people into believing certain things. There's really been a lot that's happening because people have seen how powerful these social media platforms are. And if you can, you know, get the right messages out there in the right way, you can actually change the way people think on a global scale, which is very, very scary when you think of it like that, and the fact that they have all this power.
Jack, you were going to say?
Yeah, so you were talking about the inappropriate or appropriate behavior of Twitter, depending on which side of the political aisle you're on. I mean, what's quite interesting is you had Angela Merkel coming out, and she, I can tell you, is no friend of Trump, saying that this was problematic, the banning of Trump.
The president of Mexico as well, saying the same thing. I would imagine he's no bad.
Yes, and Emmanuel Macron, and Emmanuel Macron's also no friend of President Trump. So essentially what you're seeing is the world leaders on the other side of the political aisle are saying, actually, that's a step too far. You've taken a step too far. And I think really just to, you're right, these networks are massive. So, I mean, Narishka, just billions of people, bigger than countries. But I think what the reason they've become so big is because they're actually not held to the same level of account as other companies. In America, there's a concept called a Section 230. So if you're a public square, like a telephone company where you just allow service, you have a Section 230 protection where whatever said on your network is not, you can't be taken to court for that. And all of these big social media companies have Section 230 protections. However, by doing this, by actually creating an unequal public square, by choosing what content can go on and what content can't go on, they're actually stepping into the realm of publisher. Now, all publishers, like in newspapers, don't have Section 230 protections. Mm. So I think the big debate actually to have is to what extent these big social media companies should be beyond the law in terms of the way that they behave and the way that they censor, and to what extent they should be held to account. And I think they've been able to get this big because of those protections. But maybe those protections are inappropriate at this point in time.
Right. And again, ironically, of course, we'll be posting this to YouTube and we'll be sharing it on Facebook and on LinkedIn. And perhaps we'll even share the link on WhatsApp. So it's really quite an ambivalent relationship that we have, because we love and need these large tech companies, but at the same time, and in doing so, we're empowering them more and more, but obviously are concerned about the amount of power that we're giving them, and perhaps maybe that's why, and Narishka, maybe you can answer this. Perhaps that knowledge, even if it was not overt, maybe that's what made people uncomfortable about WhatsApp, because at the end of the day, it's not there's nothing different in reality to what we've always known or thought in terms of perhaps sharing of the data. They're now just at least asking us without just doing it. But there's something that made us uncomfortable, and maybe this is what that is.
So I think it's definitely, part of it is that raising awareness of things that we didn't know before, and understanding the power that these companies have. But I think a part of it was also a bit of fake news. So for example, people thought that your private messages could be read by Facebook, and your financial information is going to be read by Facebook and things like that. Whereas, WhatsApp does use something called end-to-end encryption, where it's only the sender and the receiver who can actually read messages. If you look at the terms, they say that Facebook and WhatsApp themselves don't have the ability to read messages. When it comes to financial information, there's a feature not available in South Africa, but available in other jurisdictions called WhatsApp Pay, where you can make in-app payments and purchases. And then that's the financial information. When you buy something from a store, they would tell Facebook about that. So Facebook could send you ads related to the purchase that you made. That's the type of information they want to share. So I think a lot of it, initial hype was, oh my God, Facebook's going to read my private WhatsApp messages and see what I'm saying. But it's not really that. And then coupled with the awareness, coupled with how powerful these platforms have become, how large they've become, and how they themselves are kind of becoming, you know, the law unto themselves, making up the laws for themselves, you know, self-regulating basically, because they for lack of, instead of choosing, I'm going to follow the laws of this land and then this land and this land. These are global companies. It's actually almost impossible for them to follow the lands of hundreds of countries, and stay in compliance. So they kind of take this broad stroke approach. This is kind of, on a general level, we'll deal with hate speech. On a general level, we'll deal with, child pornography. On a general level, we'll deal with defamation. And these are our policies that we did decide that we will apply when it comes to our specific social media platform. So it definitely is a self-regulation from that point of view.
I mean, the truth is, I don't mind if they read my messages as long as they answer some of my messages. That, I think, would be very, very helpful. Jake, your final thoughts on this as we run out of time?
I would say that this is a good opportunity. I think WhatsApp and Facebook have done us a big favor. They've woken us up a little bit. You've got the proverbial frog that is boiled alive. And as long as the temperature is raised slowly and surely, no, the frog doesn't jump out. And I think we are the frogs. I think what's actually happening is our data privacy is being encroached and encroached and encroached, and little by little, and we actually don't know when it's going to be too hot, when the tables are going to be turned against us. And I think by the time we wake up, it's maybe a bit too late. So what I would urge people to do is really take cognizance of what can go wrong when your data privacy isn't protected. Don't look at all the good stuff, but actually try and focus a little bit on what could go wrong. And if you focus enough on what could go wrong, do you really want to live in that sort of a dystopian society where everyone can police exactly what you say? Where if you step a foot in the wrong direction, you're held to account, like in China with a social credit score. You speak to the wrong person, your score goes down. These are all things that are becoming a very real reality in this dystopian world that we're heading into, where data privacy isn't actually treated with enough respect and enough care. So I really do want people to wake up and realize that, maybe the water is a little bit warm, but maybe one should start hopping before it gets boiling.
Fascinating indeed. We'd love your comments. You can comment in the section below, and we'd love to hear from you. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel. Narushka, Jake, thank you both for your time. I'm Howard Feldman. This has been a Synthesis podcast, and we hope to see you soon.